Welcome to the Spin Access Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
This week, we're going to do a snake draft of reasons why students don't get better, why golfers don't get better, even though they're actively taking lessons. We did a snake draft. I would lie and say we flipped a coin or did some random thing, but I just made Tyson go first. Jason is second. I'll take the middle two spots and then back to Jason and then back to Tyson. So Tyson, first reason that you picked in the snake draft, why students do not get better.
Yeah, I picked for the first sort of discussion point here, no real order, but I picked a lack of commitment, right? I think a lot of times players will come in with the right sort of mindset that they want to get better. Obviously, we all like this game more when we suck less. So we go in with the right mindset. Then you start to take the lesson. You know, we start to diagnose their issues as a coach. And maybe the player doesn't like the way that the new move feels, or they're not buying into exactly what you're saying. And they just don't commit to what that change needs to be. And if you're not going to be fully committed, you're not going to get better. And you're not going to see the fruits of the labor, even if you're out there working on it. Because I'll see players go out and work really hard, but oftentimes when they're not seeing the outcome come fast enough that they're looking for, that lack of commitment creeps in and they start reverting back to the old move.
Yep. Bang on. I mean, you see that all the time where people come in. The best is when people come in and they tell you what they need in their swing.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my gosh, like it's now I gotta try and get them to not only not think what they think is right, but now I gotta get them to back what's actually happening in their swing. And then how do they buy into that? Because yeah, without that, then after one or maybe even one, but two or three bad rounds, they might be headed in the right direction, but they're just going to question you as a coach, and then they're going to go back to whatever they're doing before.
Yeah, so lack of commitment could be a lot of things.
A lot of things.
It could be a lack of commitment to how long it will take.
Sure.
A lack of commitment to how much time they should give it each day. I try to tell my students that even 4 minutes or 5 minutes of practice three times a day is useful. You don't have to go to the range for an hour 6 days a week to get better at golf.
Absolutely.
But a lack of commitment to just the process, I think, overall is what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the things that I'll tell people a lot of times, like obviously any of one of us, if we took the Golf Digest top 100 list and we went and took a lesson from all 100 of those instructors, I think we would get very different information from a lot of them.
Yep.
I think a lot of it would be pretty similar. Don't get me wrong, right? Because our swing is our swing. A lot of it would be very similar, but you're going to get different ideas on what you need to do as a player to improve. I think where people see real improvement, I think three things have to happen. The coach has to believe that what they're telling that player is the truth and is real, and this is how you're going to get better. The player has to believe what the coach is telling them, and then the player has to go work on those things and truly commit to the process of what that looks like. And I think it is a part of our job to sort of explain to them, hey, as you start to work on this, this is probably what you're going to see. Like, I think as coaches, if we understand how people move, and we can probably predict, hey, when you start to work on this, you might start hitting it a little heavy, or you might...
You're going to pull hook it off the planet for a while.
Like, we can predict that. Yeah. And a lot of times people are shocked when you predict it and then they do it. They're like, oh, wow, look, I did hook it. Or, yeah, you're right. I did hit that one heavy. Right. I think when we explain that to them, then when they go out and they start to see those things happen, then they're less likely to move away from the process, but it's still a very difficult thing.
Yeah. It's funny just talking about those poles. I have a student, you know, that we're working on his club face. It's way too weak at the top. And I said, the first thing we need to do is get the club face in a better spot. However, it's going to be very frustrating because once that gets better and we haven't gone into the second thing, yeah, you're going to hit poles for days. Your game is going to go the wrong way for a bit because you're going to hit the ball too solidly and it's going to go over the green long left and you're going to be like, gosh, this is so frustrating. But you just got to know that's a part of the process.
That blends into what your thing is. If we move to you in the snake draft, Jason, your thing is what?
Worried about outcomes, which is very hard because golf is outcome based. It is very much when you get onto the golf course, what's the score that you write down on your card at the end of the day when you hand it in? And the problem when you're trying to make changes in your golf swing is sometimes, now not always, but sometimes you're going to be worried about hitting great golf shots. And that's going to get in the way of trying to make the pattern changes that you want, especially if you're trying to make more than one pattern change. I would say if I was to maybe throw out a number, maybe 50% of like students slash lessons are more than one pattern needs to be changed.
Sure.
Right? You get the students that come in and it's just like, oh, they got a really weak grip, or the ball position's in a bad spot, or the shaft's just in a bad spot, but everything else is in a pretty good, you know, spot. And it's like, oh, if we just change this one
various
element.
Various compensations working against or for each other.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you get golfers that are, you know, crazy over the top, faces too open, bad laterals, you know, bad pressure shift. And you can't work on all those same things at the same time. And you just got to be honest with the students sometimes, going like, all right, we've got four things that we need to sort out, and we're going to do one, maximum two at a time. And when you work through those, you might be hitting it sort of all over the place. And you feel bad as a golf coach, because that's the last thing you want a student to do. But sometimes it's just easier to tell them. And then, and you get the, should I bring it to the course? I'm like, well, no, I don't want you to bring it to the course. It's going to start leaking in there no matter what, if you're working on it properly, but I don't want you to try and worry about trying to bring it out there, because it's not a complete, you know, project yet. So there's some of that going on. So the problem again is, if you're not committed to that, if you're not ready, I mean, even my own game, like right now is a perfect example. I don't know if you follow me on social media, but I posted one just the other day of like my driver is probably the worst I've ever hit my driver right now. It is just abysmal, because I'm so in between my two patterns, where I used to get really long and across the line, and then I would just reroute it really well and I'd square it up, and my wrist conditions and my release match that, and I could have this long, I mean, for me, it was ugly. I mean, most coaches probably say it was ugly, but it worked. Like, I could hit it 280 in the air and keep it in play, like, you know, 95% of the time. But it's hard on my shoulder. So I'm like, all right, I need to get my swing in a better spot, so my shoulder doesn't hurt anymore. In order to do that, I need to change my swing. In order to change my swing, I got to first change my backswing, and I got to get that in a good position. Well, once that's in a better position, well, then I got to work on my downswing. I'm not trying to work on them both at the same time, because it's too hard on my brain. So right now I'm okay. That's funny as it sounds, playing terrible golf for myself, right? I can still hack it around for the most part, but is it where I want to be? No. But am I worried about it? No, because I know I have to get this other part in. Once that other part starts getting in, if then I started playing bad golf, then I'd be like, all right, something's not great. But you gotta like trust the process.
Yeah. So the outcomes that we need to worry about are what I call changing the picture, right? We need to change the mechanics and the way we move. That's the outcome that needs to be worried about. I've told this story on the podcast. I don't remember the specifics, but I had one of the funniest texts I ever got from a student. Was he was like a 4 handicap or something like that. And he's like, I'm like, how'd you play? He goes, great. I shot 87. And I'm like, what? Like, that's not good. Like, what? Like, yeah. 27 holes? Like, what? He goes, no. I flew it over like 11 greens. Yeah. Like, I'd never do that. You know, I was just, everything was so much more solid and farther. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I just have relearn how far I hit this thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what club to pick.
Right. The outcomes that you should be after when you're working on your golf swing are, am I moving better?
Yeah.
Right. Are my mechanics better? Am I getting better at doing this? Don't worry immediately about the launch monitor numbers, or whether you're scoring, or whether you're hitting fairways or greens. That comes.
Yep.
And trust your coach, trust yourself to get there.
Yep.
I'll just finish that up. It's very interesting, especially when you get someone in front of a launch monitor and you can get them to break apart face and path. Because sometimes golfers, like, they don't know that they can separate those two. And as a coach, it's sometimes easier to go like, all right, your path is so out in, let's say if you're slicing it, let's not worry about where the ball starts. Can we just get, you know, the shaft come in a good spot, get the body to move, and then can we get an in to out number, whatever that is, if we can get into the plus numbers, and you get them hitting that, and then it's like, all right, perfect. So there's your feel for your club path. All right, so now let's keep that feel and let's work on start closing the club face. And you can get a person that is a chronic slicer to a drawer in one lesson if you can allow them to break those two apart.
Yep. I had about 4 of those this week. All right, Eric, so what's your first pick in this draft?
I almost never say no, do it slower.
That was too slow.
I said that wrong. No. Go faster, please. Yeah. I almost never say that in a lesson. I say, no, please go slower all the time. I've started asking for 40%, because obviously the joke in golf instruction is if you ask for 40%, they swing at 75%.
Yep.
And nobody's backswing is ever as short as they think. Mm-hmm. You know, you say make half a backswing and the club gets 10 degrees from parallel to the ground. Students do not go slow enough or exaggerate enough to change the picture.
Correct.
Right? If you're using the Swing Coach app, for just because it gives you a 1 to 10 scale of too deep or not deep enough or too steep or too shallow or whatever. If you are a four in the wrong direction for whatever you're trying to work on, you needed to feel probably a six in the other direction.
Yeah.
Just to make it close to neutral. And then you need to practice that for a while. And after a month, you're not going to need to feel a six. You can probably feel a three or a two or, you know, back it down. But I like people to practice way past the fix, way past it, because it's easier to kind of come at the ideal solution from both sides. And since you're really good at the one side, the bad side for now, I like to overdo and just spend a lot of time on the other side of it. It's still a bad side, right? It's still overdone.
Right, right.
But then work at it more from that side than the side that you're already really good at.
Yeah.
You know, if you roll it inside too much, you need to take it outside for a little while.
Yep.
And then you'll settle in the middle.
I posted just a reel the other day, and it's like, just lift your lead arm. Like, imagine you're lifting your lead arm straight up. Like I highlighted it, and four comments. It's going to create a disconnected takeaway. I know it very much would be. However, someone that rolls it in because they don't lift their arms enough in their golf swing, that's what they need to feel like. And until they do it too much, perfect. Like, not every real video is for you. You have to understand, like, if this is your issue, this is a feel that you may need. And until you videotape yourself and you're like, oh man, my hands are actually moving too far off my body. Okay, great. Now you can back off that feel a bit. But for most golfers, you need to feel so extreme. I mean, you look at everybody on the PGA Tour. Look at Justin Thomas. Thomas posted a video where he was trying to get his club face more open at the top. And it is literally hanging down like every slicer, you know, that golfs with like Ben Hogan's grip. But does a swing look like that at all? No, absolutely not. But that's the feel that a guy that's, you know, won millions and millions on the PGA Tour, Alex Noren, Justin Rose, you can just keep naming it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, amateurs feel like they can just go to the range with some easy feel that they get off YouTube hit balls at full speed.
Yeah. And I think the classic, and I see this so much, and especially with guys, I think girls at times are maybe a little bit more, you know, willing to exaggerate. But I see guys so often, well, they do it once when I make them remove the ball and go slow and I'll video it. Oh yeah, I got it. And then they want to go 100% capacity. Like, dude, you don't have anything, right? That swing looks identical. And again, to Eric's point, I say this all the time. I want you to know both sides of the extreme, because if you do, we can find somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to do that, it is very likely you're not going to get better, right?
If you can't do the move at 70% speed,
yep,
slow down.
Yep.
Okay. If you can do the move perfectly, you're going a little too slow. I want you to make small mistakes. But if you can't do it at 90%, slow down to 70%. If you can't do it at 70%, slow down to 50%. Remove the ball. Do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slow down. Exaggerate. Change the picture.
I was just going to say, it's okay to finish a range session not ever getting to 100% when you're first working at it.
For sure.
For sure. I have plenty of range sessions where I don't ever get above 70%, and it's 2 months that I've been doing the same thing, because I just want to work at that speed that day. That's fine. I have the next one in the snake draft, which was no measurements or feedback. The ball flight is a form of feedback, but especially early on, you can't just say, oh, that one felt good. You don't know what good feels like. Or you might have just made the old swing a little bit differently, and maybe you hit it good that time. But that's not feedback that you need that time. Feedback is video, at least. Feedback is mirrors. Feedback is some of the apps out there that do some kind of quasi-analysis, or at least tell you, oh, your shaft was here on that swing instead of where it usually is, way over there, or something. You need some kind of measurement or feedback, right? Set up a practice station.
Yep, bang on.
Whether you hit the stick or not, like on your follow-through, is a form of feedback. Right. I love the follow through stick for people that swing way left, the people that are learning to swing to the right. There's ways you can do it badly, but for people that know how to swing to the right, I love to have the stick out there kind of on the shaft plane, on the target line, the base of it in the ground, and they need to feel it as though they swing over it. And if they brush it or nick it or plow right into it, they know they did something differently.
Yep.
Right. Cover it in a pool noodle. Yeah.
Get a new alignment stick.
That's right. Eventually, you're going to get tired of having to re-stick it in the ground, and you're going to miss it on the proper side.
Yeah.
And I think in today's world, we live in a world where we have more feedback tools than we've ever had. And to your point, you know, heck, everyone's taking their phone to the golf course and taking videos. Actually use it for your golf swing. You know, don't just record TikToks with it. You use it for your golf swing. You can even use it as a mirror. Just put it in video mode and selfie mode where you can see yourself and watch the move in your camera. That's a form of feedback. But if you don't have feedback, and if, as Eric said, if the only thing that you're using for feedback is the ball flight or the outcome of the shot, sometimes the outcome is the worst piece of feedback. You can do everything wrong and hit a good golf shot. And on the flip side, you can make a perfect golf swing and miss the golf ball. It doesn't mean you made a good swing or a bad swing.
So Jason, that segues into yours, which is
chasing the reaction and not the cause. So a lot of golfers, even if you are videotaping your swing, for instance, you might be standing up through impact, you might be stalling, and you're like, gosh, I really want to like stay in posture better. If you're chasing the wrong thing, you're going to constantly do that and you're not going to get any better. You need to find out, again, root cause. Obviously, everyone listening knows we're big root cause, backswing, you know, like setup movements like earlier. You got to keep going back. Why are you doing that?
Yeah. People are often right about something they see, but that's, like you said, the results, not the actual cause. What usually happens is something three steps earlier in the swing caused that.
Yeah. So when you're trying to chase to fix that, go backwards, find out why you did that. And if you can't find it yourself, then find a good coach. But stop just trying to, you know, just get rid of early extension. Go find out why you have to really extend. And it might be outside of your swing. I had this with a student a couple of days ago where he had a really bad lead hip. I have bad hips, and his hip was worse than mine. And he literally can't turn and load into that hip. So he would literally just come stand right out of it.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, just drop the club for a second. Let's just move. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, just drop the club. Just get into posture. Just turn. Show me what you feel like where impact should be. And he's like, right there. And I'm like, how painful is that? It's actually really painful. Like, and you think you're going to do that in your golf swing? He's like,
at 100 miles an hour.
I was hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, man, you need to go see a PT. And he was like, yeah, I agree. And so we sort of wrapped up the lesson because he knew what he needed to work on. And until he can get his body into a better spot, he's going to early extend. Like, his face was in a great spot, shaft's in a good spot. His body just said, nope, we're not staying in that. Yeah. So don't chase the wrong thing.
All right, Tyson, you had the last one here.
Yeah. And I think we've sort of hit on this a couple of times as we've started this or went through this discussion. But I think, you know, so many players are trying to do too many things in one golf swing, right? They're trying to turn more. They're trying to push the hips back. They're trying to flex the lead wrist. They've got all these things they're trying to do. You know, the golf swing's around 1 second, right? From the time we move the club away to the time we hit it. If you're trying to do too many things at the same time, you're not going to do anything, any of them well. And ultimately, you're not going to change your pattern. Again, as Jason was just saying, you know, if you're early extending, ask why. And I always say, you need to keep asking why until you can't ask why anymore. Now you've gotten to the root cause. If we can systematically fix a pattern in the right order, step by step, you're going to be more likely to actually make a change. But if you're trying to do five things at once, you're probably not going to make any of them better.
I had the camera app up, of course, because I was recording some swings. And one guy, I asked him, what are you trying to do in your golf swing? And I just hit record. It was just recording the floor, right? I just had it in my hand. I used it as a stopwatch, basically. 37 seconds later, he finished telling me what he's trying to do in his golf swing.
Ooh.
And it was just a recording of the floor, but I showed him the time of the recording, and you could hear him talking. And he goes, is that too much? I said, yes. How about 0.37 seconds? Like, if you could say it in that amount of time, or at most, because you're stumbling over your words, 3.7 seconds, maybe. Okay. Like,
right.
Yeah. One thing at a time.
I mean,
setup, I let people do three or four setup things because you can take an extra 2 seconds to do each one of those things. And then it's like one thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe occasionally a backswing thing and a downswing thing. Maybe.
Yeah.
And that's if you've been doing one of them for a long time and it's getting close to baked in. So trying to do too many things is a good thing. It's funny to ask students, what are you trying to do? And they tell you, and you're like,
I love it.
A lot. That's so much.
Yeah. You just stop them and go like, does that sound too much?
This is why you're not hitting the ball good.
Because they'll hit a ball on the range and they'll be like, oh, it must be thing seven. And they'll do that one on the next swing. And then it'll be like, oh, that one must be swing thing two. And then they'll do that thing. It's like, no, man. Like, one thing at a time. Maybe occasionally if something else starts getting way out of whack, spend a couple of days on that thing and then come back to your,
yep,
to your main thing. This is for, we did a snake draft for students. For non-students, I think the number one item on the list might be, besides time and the fact that they don't practice well and those things, the ones that do try to practice and get better at golf, they're constantly chasing a Band-Aid for what they did on either the previous shot or the last round,
yeah,
or something like that. So they're constantly basically trying to Band-Aid it for the next round. When really you should say, okay, look, what are the one, two, or three priority items that I am going to ever work on in my golf swing ever for the rest of my life, probably?
Yes.
What are those? What's number one on that list? Let me bang on that for a while. Let me bang on number two for a while when number one gets pretty good. And maybe I'll get to number three someday. Whatever, right? Stop chasing Band-Aids. I think for non-students, our students hopefully are not chasing Band-Aids. They are getting told, this is your priority, let's go with that. But non-students, you see them on the range, you know, they occasionally say, ah, my buddy, whatever. They're chasing Band-Aids all the time.
My tempo went off. I'm so like, it just drives me crazy when you walk down the range,
yeah,
and you see people and they're working on it. I remember I asked one guy, he's like, oh, just, yeah, my tempo is just too quick on that. And I, you know, just, I have a swing like seared into my brain because everything is bad. But yeah, absolutely. It's for sure the tempo. That's what it is. It's your tempo.
Well, listen, when everything's bad, it better be good tempo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know what's funny? It was a couple years ago, he came to me at the club. We were having dinner and he goes, Jason, I realized that I'm not a good golfer that hits bad shots. I'm a bad golfer that hits good shots. I said,
bingo.
Yes.
You are the majority of your shots, not the outliers.
Yeah,
that's right. Awesome. Great. I love that snake draft. That was a lot of fun. Jason, where can people find us?
You can find us on all social medias at The Spin Axis, and you can find us online at thespinaxis.com.
Let us know if we missed anything, and we look forward to hearing from you.